This is Dave Glowatz. Welcome to another in a series of my interviews with Ben Jarofsky, who writes on politics and government for the Chicago Reader, and who's here with me today. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
Today we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on July 28th, 2011, and in the print version it's titled Blogger Crusades Against Education Reforms, and in the online version it's called Blogger Fred Klonsky's Crusade Against Public Education Reform. And in the former, reform is in quotes, and in the latter, it is not.
Is that right?
That's right.
Whoa, should always be in quotes.
And this talks about a blogger named Fred Klonsky, who is a suburban school teacher.
That is correct.
And in particular, a recent revelation of a sort of school reform video that went viral on the internet of a Mr. Edelman describing how he and a group that he's associated with helped pass a recent so-called reform education bill.
The video was just of him making a presentation to a group of people at a think tank conference in Colorado in which he was bragging about how he and his fellow reformers, that is in quotes, hoodwinked, bamboozled the state into passing a school reform bill. That reform bill is, whenever reform is mentioned now, it'll always be in quotes. And what he did was he spoke so contemptuously of everybody in the state of Illinois, all of whom deserve his contempt, that he was forced to back off and apologize for his remarks.
You write that the bill that we're talking about, which is sometimes called Senate Bill 7, which is now a law, probably won't have much impact on Chicago public school teachers because the CPS administration has already figured out a way to skirt the teachers' union contract and dump teachers for any particular cause or without good cause. What about the law's requirement that for Chicago public teachers to strike, they need 75% majority votes to strike? I mean, even Mr. Edelman says that, hell, they'll never get that, and that's as good as a no-strike provision.
I'll get to that later, but first let's shamelessly promote ourselves. It was the great Dave Glowatz, working in concert with yours truly, that wrote about many of these machinations, as you recall, Dave, last summer.
Our award-winning September article.
Our award-winning September article, back from self-promotion.
He almost hurt his arm, folks, patting himself on the back.
I wish you nobody
could,
else will,
wish
God
you could see it.
Anyway, okay, what a joke, the teacher strike thing. First of all, the teachers are not about to go on strike. It's such a difficult time for teachers and for anybody in this economy. So to go on strike right now, it would have to be particularly an egregious move by the board that would provoke it. And I don't think getting rid of, as the board has, the last year of the contract would do that. Secondly, they wouldn't go on strike if they didn't have like 90% vote anyway. If they were going to go on strike, they'd make sure they had a 90% vote. So I didn't even bother mentioning that in the article because I thought it was so stupid, the 75% hike. In this day and age, I don't think it's realistic to expect any union leader to lead a strike with only 52%. Her members, Karen Lewis, her members are behind it. So again, it was another meaningless exercise in nothing in that bill.
Part of the issue here is that the so-called reformers want to hold teachers accountable, which is something that you mock in your article.
Totally, continually.
That teachers aren't the only, in fact, you list a series of series of factors that make it difficult for a kid to learn in school.
I had other factors, which I think I cut for space too. It was a long, long list. I just went wild. I threw television in there at one point, I think. Too much TV, not enough reading.
Well, I read a commentator who was a teacher who complained that students aren't held responsible. He said that students know that they won't suffer consequences for poor performance. For example, they will get passed right along to the next grade in many instances instead of being held back. What do you think about that?
I don't know what to say. I mean, of course they're held accountable. If ultimately a student emerges, even with social promotion, from 8 years, what is it, 8 years, 12 years of school, and they can't read, they won't get a job. So they'll be held accountable.
I'm guessing that this commentator meant that they're not held accountable in the moment, in the classroom.
The real problem is, in my humble opinion, that we don't know as a society how to educate a certain segment of our society. I'm so old, I remember when students were, quote-unquote, held accountable. I remember when, in its infinite wisdom, the Board of Education, which was then led by Gary Chico and Paul Vallis and Mayor Daley, of course, ended social promotion in Chicago. Remember that? It's so curious that this writer would say social promotion has been brought back. I didn't see that press release. I just saw the press release where they ended it. And so every year they'd flunk thousands of kids, make them go and sit in sweltering classrooms during summer school. so they could learn what they didn't learn during the year and pass a test, which is not really supposed to be a pass-fail test. It's supposed to be a barometer of what you know. And then once they pass the test, they were then promoted. Well, that social promotion, the end of social promotion occurred in the mid-90s, so that the students whose promotion, social promotion was ended are now roughly, I don't know, you're better at math than I am, somewhere in their 20s, and are trying, in many cases, to go to the city colleges of Chicago as part of the remedial programs. And irony of irony, Gary Chico, the aforementioned Gary Chico, was the president of the board, said we as, when he was president, he's no longer president of the board, said we as a city colleges cannot afford to spend the money to have these remediation programs for the students who were not promoted when they ended social promotion. So I think this is just all gobbledygook and PR press releases, Dave, to cover up for the fact that nobody has a clue. I can't really blame anybody because I don't have a clue. I don't know how to solve these problems.
Well, as you point out, the problems are societal. You have such disparity in people's living conditions and people's family conditions and how they grow up. By the time they get to school, what the heck can you do?
I couldn't have said it better. That's really well put. I don't know what else to say. It takes a concerted effort by all sorts of forces to try to overcome these disparities. And what we have in this teacher accountability movement is the pretense that those disparities don't exist, and that the way to solve this enormously complicated problem that's eluded people for years is to beat the crap out of teachers and make it harder for teachers to get a job, harder for teachers to keep a job, make them work more hours, make less money, have fewer benefits. How in the world do they think, as a long-term strategy, this will encourage anybody to invest their life in the teaching profession is beyond me. I don't think they've thought it out beyond the current fight, which is to get something passed. I didn't really get into this in this particular story, but I think it's obvious. It's an anti-union movement. It's not so much an anti-teachers movement. It's an anti-union movement. We've had this conversation before. Unions are mainly the check and balance on the Republican Party and the right wing. So if you cripple the unions, you've really diminished the oversight that Republicans have to deal with. So it's just a lot of things coming together. But certainly, I cannot see how it's going to help attack that disparity that you so eloquently describe.
And for some of the folks we're talking about, to admit to those disparities in some way would imply that they would admit to their inability or their unwillingness to attack those who promulgate the policies that make these disparities possible, which means they would have to go after their leaders in a way that they're not likely to do. So it's all wrapped up.
I mean, it's so bizarre, Dave. I mean, what you just described is so, you really did a good job of describing it. Like when a kid shows up at kindergarten and he's at a huge disadvantage with another kid who comes from a wealthier background, obviously it's going to take a lot of money in those first years to bridge that gap, you know, close that gap. Well, we're seeing tax dollars being cut back. The forces are advocating for less tax dollars from the wealthiest people. So you have the wealthiest people funding a not-for-profit movement that's supposed to hold teachers accountable. At the same time, the wealthiest people are paying proportionally less than they had been paying for the very programs that are probably needed to, you know, close that gap. It's preposterous.
So if anything, they're making it work.
You're here.
We could go on, but we don't have time. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
This is Dave Glowatz. You've been listening to my interview with Ben Jarofsky. When you get a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for further installments or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.